So, Viola Williams, Reel 2. Were you at Reading when the war started?
No. No, I was there 35 to 37.
What happened after Reading? What was your job?
Well, there's a little bit more of Reading, I think you don't mind, a little bit more. I couldn't play cricket that summer, so I swatted, and I knew that I was pretty safe for a first in everything except chemistry, except inorganic chemistry, which I just never understood, and I still don't understand. But I knew I was all right for first and everything except that. And by the grace of God, the day that we had the practical inorganic chemistry examination, we had the court case for my car accident. So I couldn't do it with everybody milling round and getting more and more frantic. And I did it by myself on a Saturday morning with the lab assistant looking after me. And as he and I were great friends, because we both collected cigarette cards, and we were great friends, so I sat on the bench. No, I wrote down the answers while he sat on the bench. And I never did a bit of practical chemistry at all for that examination. And I got my first, and I've never had the slightest conscience about that. Never. Except that about 3 or 4 days later, I met the chemistry professor, who said, "Miss Williams, I have no idea that you knew so much chemistry." But I've never had any qualms about that, because it didn't seem to me to be relevant, so I didn't mind. And then I came down from Reading, because I couldn't do any of the practical work, because my arm was in a sling still. And so everybody was terribly sympathetic. I was all right. I mean, I knew I was all right for first, except in that. But when I came down, I went straight off to a job in North London in a nursery on the North Circular Road, and I got the sack after a week for incompetence, which was very good for me.
Was that due to your broken arm?
No, it wasn't. It was due to the fact that we had never had... We were right out in the country, and we'd never had a telephone until fairly recently. And I was petrified of them. And I got parked in the office at this job to deal with the telephone. And I mean, I made such a hash of it in the week. I think he got his notice in about 10 minutes before I got mine. But
there many jobs open for young women, though?
No, there weren't. But I did belong to something which called itself the Women's Farm and Garden Association, which you may not have come across. It's still going strong. It was specifically for women going into gardening and farming. It had a hostel in London, up near King's Cross, which was extremely useful for when one had to get up to London for anything. And they did try and get you into jobs. And I think my North London one was probably one of theirs. Then I went home, and my father, being typically my father, said, "Well, I'll give you another fortnight and then you can get out." And so I got. And I went into something which fulfilled my headmistress's prophecy. I went into a nursery just outside Fordingbridge, which was known as the concentration camp. There were staff of 100 there. It was absolutely huge. It was a glass house and French frame nursery. It was enormous. And there were 100, I think there were about 100 men, and there was one woman and me. And we were the female side of it. And the stuff that we produced there, I've never met such quality anywhere in the world since. The stuff we turned out there was absolute perfection. I was in the packing shed, so with about six others, so that we knew what was going through our hands. And it went straight up to Covent Garden every night by lorry. And it was, it gave me a standard that it's always been there. We did all sorts of bulbs, lilies, gladioli, all the spring bulbs, carnations, chrysanthemums, summer annuals. It was all cut flower, and we had the overall man was an absolute beast. He really was a beast. The one in charge of the packing shed was a martinet, but a fair martinet, and I was great friends with him for a long time afterwards until he died. He was all right. He was a martinet, but he was all right. But I got my own back on the boss, the manager. But I'll tell you about that later, because I really did, because that was part of the war, and I got my own back on him. But because I remember one night, I mean, if the flowers came in, you had to give them 2 hours watering before you were allowed to touch them. And sometimes they didn't come in until 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night. We started at 6:45 every morning, and if you were 5 minutes late, you got docked pay. And at 30 bob a week, you didn't do that very often. You did get overtime, we did get overtime, but I mean, I'd been there up till 12 o'clock at night still packing if the stuff was there. We had one Sunday off a month, and Saturday afternoon if you were lucky. Sunday we had to do, because of course Covent Garden operates on Mondays, so I mean we had to do Sundays. But the quality of the stuff we touched was absolutely, it was really beautiful stuff. And we really did learn how to pack flowers too, how to bunch them, pack them. Our best buncher could do 120 bunches of daffodils in an hour, with 12 daffodils, a bunch of green, and two ties, and he could do 120 an hour. I mean, we worked, but it was a nice team. We enjoyed ourselves. At least I did. I thoroughly enjoyed the whole time I was there. It was a dead end, but it was an education.
How were you treated by the men generally?
Oh, no problem at all. Mm. Absolutely no problem at all.
They're sort of sexist.
Oh no. Mm? They I've only twice bumped into problems, and it certainly wasn't the problem there. Actually, I think largely because quite soon after I got there, the other woman who used to do the tea and everything for us was off, and being the other woman, they put me in to make the tea for breakfast and lunch. And I decided this was not my line at all. So I boiled the tea for 2 hours, and they didn't ask me to do it anymore. And all the rest of the staff knew what I'd done, and they thought it was very funny. So I had no problems after that. But the stuff we handled was absolutely gorgeous. And then the Women's Farm and Garden offered me something in a private house in just south of London. And I went up there, and my father said at the time he thought it was a mistake, and it was. That was a private thing. It only lasted, I think I only stayed there a month. It was absolutely impossible, quite impossible in all directions. But I was lucky, because again the Women's Farm and Garden said they'd got a temporary job with Southlands Training College in Wimbledon, which was only for the summer term, because they got somebody coming in the autumn. But if I'd like to take that, they'd look for something else for me in the meanwhile. So I went to Southlands Training College as head gardener, and that was fun, because I I clicked there with a woman called Lean, who was David Lean's sister. And so we had a fairly drama-ridden summer. And, of course, it was Wimbledon. And it, Wimbledon was, what, 5 minutes walk away or something. So we finished at five, so you could do all the evening things. That's wonderful. And then, again, Women's Farm and Garden came in and got me a job in a school in South London, in Beckenham, as head gardener and science teacher. It was a private school. It was a terrible school. The staff were resident and we weren't fed properly. I kicked up a stink because I said I couldn't do practical work on the food we were getting. But one of the kids took horticulture after me and went to Redditch. She came to me as an apprentice later and then went on to Reading afterwards, and I knew her until she died a few years ago. And so there were other sort of things. And also I played lacrosse for Kent at the time and coached games and got a little extra money in the two winter terms for coaching games, coaching lacrosse. And in the summer I did the swimming. I dealt with the swimming and I got a lot of them through their bronze life saving, and I got my own teachers sailing thing at the same time. And at the end of the summer term, the headmistress said that swimming was not a sport and therefore I was not due for my bonus. So I was already sort of cross about the whole thing. And then the war came, and the declaration came on the Sunday, and my father said quite firmly, "You are not going back to London because London is going to be bombed and you are not going back to London." So I waited till he'd gone to work the next day and caught the next train up to London. And all the way up, I was thinking, now, what am I going to tell the headmistress? How am I going to get out of this? And she just played straight into my hands. I went down not having a clue what I was going to say. And she said, "Oh, Miss Williams, I know what you've come about. The Land Army have called you up, haven't they?" And I said, "Yes, this group, they have." And within 2 hours, I was out. And then I did a couple of months for the Land Army, and then I did, and I don't think this was a Women's Farm and Garden one, but I went down to Somerset, to be head gardener at school in Bruton in Somerset, which I think was probably the best school that I've ever had anything to do with. It was partly county granted and partly private, partly boarding, partly day girls. Very good staff, very good headmistress. And no matter whether you were the head gardener, the head cook, the head housemaid, you were part of the staff, academic or not. And it was a very happy do. I couldn't get into a force because I was growing spuds. I was feeding 200 for lunch every day or something with vegetables or something like that. And
did you want to go into the forces?
Oh, yes, of course I wanted to go into the forces. I trotted down every 5 minutes to the Labour Exchange. And every time I was told, you know, that I was on a reserved occupation. And but it was... I enjoyed it because I took drama after school hours with all the resident forms, all the forms that were resident, and that was fun. So it was a good do, and then I went on from there to another private one, and that was also was a disaster. That was in Richwood, and it was a stately home with an autocratic female, a wonderful, wonderful vegetable area, but she insisted, even in the middle of the war, of growing orchids and things in the greenhouses when I was trying to grow tomatoes, and we didn't see eye to eye. Then I got another temporary one with at Cheltenham Ladies College as the head garden at the top of the lake. That again was, I knew it was temporary, but it was, it looks awfully good on a CV. And that was good because the headmistress there was, if she'd got people coming round, visitors or parents coming round, she would always introduce you. I mean, there was no question of you're the gardener and she's there. She was very good, Miss Popham, excellent, but not the staff. The first morning I was there, I went into coffee because, well, I'd always been part of the staff before, and I went into coffee. And there was sort of horrified silence in the staff room, and they sort of looked at me as if I was something from outer Mars. And it was gently pointed out to me that I was the gardener. However, we persevered, and I used to go into coffee every morning, and gradually they got used to seeing me there. And then one morning, one of the staff, I forget which one it was, leant across and said, "Oh, Miss Williams, I'm sending Mary Brown out to you for her classes with me because she's got no brains and she'd do very well in the garden." And I was actually on the ball, and I said, "Miss so-and-so, if I sat up tonight and swatted up your subject, I could take all your classes tomorrow and nobody would know the difference. If you came out into the garden tomorrow, you wouldn't even know where to begin." And they put me on the careers committee. It was good. We were digging up all the playing fields. We were growing vegetables everywhere. It was a good short term. And then I got onto the Wilts War Agricultural Executive Committee, the horticultural section, as an assistant horticultural officer.
This takes us into the Dig for Victory campaign, does it? Yes. Before you go into that, you know, this period that you've been describing, the early, this would be the phony war period, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yes. How quickly did they get change over, you know, into people growing vegetables rather than flowers and more luxurious things before the Dig for Victory campaign?
I think it really took off when Churchill came in, which was in the early 40s. I think he was the one that he made us all sit up, and then I think we really sat up when Churchill came in. And
had it been fairly informal before then, you know?
Yes. It certainly didn't affect us very much. We were in the heart of Somerset, and as long as I could produce enough vegetables for lunch, nobody really bothered very much. One or two of the staff joined up and went down and did chips and things for any troops that there were around. I was doing drama in the evening with the kids most nights, and I didn't bother to do anything else. I couldn't get into a force, and so that was that.
So the Wilts Agricultural Committee, the war, yes. Is that what it was called? The Wilts War?
Well, each county had its own. There would be the West Sussex War Agricultural Committee, the Somerset War Agricultural Committee, the Wiltshire War Agricultural Committee. And Bill Price was the boss of the Wilts War Agricultural Committee. So, I mean, I went back to him again. We were four of us in the horticultural department. We were responsible for any lecturing that any things like the Young Farmers or the Women's Institute or Village Produce Associations or anybody, or allotment associations, anybody who wanted lectures and talks and demonstrations on horticulture, we would be detailed off for it. And we also did a lot of advisory work to to tomato nurseries and anybody who was growing vegetables. There was a big vegetable growing area in my garden area just north of Devizes in Wiltshire, and we had quite a bit to do with that. And then four of us were given a van, a big demonstration van. We had the head poultry maid, the head dairy maid, the head cook female, and me. And we used to go round to the villages and park on the village green and open up and do demonstrations or advisory work. We were known as the circus. And we had tremendous fun. We were an awfully nice, we were a very nice bunch of four, and we hit it off. And people would say, you know, please can you come and stay. So we used to drive round all around Wiltshire with our little van and do demonstrations of one sort or another, and enjoy that.
Yes, what sort of demonstrations would you be doing?
Well, I'd probably be doing either seed sowing or taking cuttings or pruning. Pruning was always one thing. And another thing that was very rife during the war, during the time I was with them, was the number of people with old apple trees that weren't producing an awful lot. And one of the things that I certainly did with great intensity was going around grafting new varieties onto old apple trees. And there's one village in Wiltshire, which I'll swear that every apple tree in the village was one of my plots. But that was quite interesting. And then another thing that we had to do, we had to go round to anybody who asked for, anybody on the horticultural side, this one, who asked for a tractor or a land girl. We had to go round and assess whether they really needed it or not, and whether, because they were rather like gold land girls and tractors. That taught me a lesson which I've stuck to ever since. I went to one farm who wanted a tractor, and I thought he'd got a reasonable chance of getting his tractor. And as I was getting back into the car, he gave me half a dozen eggs. And eggs was eggs in those days. And I couldn't get his tractor through the committee. And it taught me a lesson that I never, ever took bribes again. When I go past that farm now, I probably sounded quite different there, but I still blush as I came past. It was a very good lesson, that. And of course, the other thing that where I got my own back on my hail nursery man was that he asked for a land girl, and I was detailed to go to his farm. He was growing tomatoes, and I was detailed to go to his place to see whether he really was due for a land girl or not. Actually was, but I gave him a very nasty half hour.
Did they have to be of a certain size to have tractors and land girls?
Yes. Well, no, they wasn't so much size, it was the intensity of what they were doing. Obviously for a tractor they had to have a certain amount of size for it. But for a lot of it, it was intensive or not. For instance, the female that I worked for in Oxford, the private stately home there, I would not have allocated a land girl to her, because she wasn't doing her stuff by the wall. The other thing, of course, that I got landed with was going around allotments all around the county and making sure that every allotment was being cultivated, and if not, coming down on the local parish clerk to ask him why they weren't all being cultivated. That was interesting, because that took you around to all sorts of places which you wouldn't have gone to otherwise. And usually, most people were doing this. I mean, every little verge we were growing was growing vegetables of some sort. Every possible plot during those last years of the war was growing vegetables.
What happened with flowers, you know, given the emphasis on vegetables? Could you grow flowers, you know, was that...
Yes, but very much as a third choice. I mean, it wasn't looked on with any great enthusiasm, growing flowers.
Was it forbidden?
I don't think it was forbidden, but there was so much emphasis on the food side of it that most people never queried the other side of it, the flower side at all. I mean, they just stopped growing flowers, except possibly in a little bit of ground somewhere around the house or something like that. But I mean, the number of people who dug their lawns up and grew spuds on their lawns, the number of people who had six hens in a revolting little enclosure at the bottom of the garden, the number of people who kept a pig. I got involved with pigs because while I was with the Wilts War Ag, the job of home economics organiser for the county came up, and I had already done courses on fruit preservation and meat preservation, all that sort of thing at Bristol University, and I thought that it would be rather nice to get a permanent job, if I couldn't get into a force, it would be rather nice to get a permanent job as the county home economics advisor. So I put in for it, and I didn't get it, and the woman who got it came down. She came down the 1st of January, and I was detailed to show around the county, to show what the county was like. But in those days, I drove an open car. You can drive an open car in this country for at least 200 days out of the year without if you're wrapped up. And I took this female called Jolly, and I took her all around the county in my open Morris. And 3 days later, she had pneumonia. I think she must have had it on her when she came, because I don't think it would have happened all that soon. But anyway, she was off for a long time, and so they asked me if I would do her job. And because she was down to do a couple of courses at Smithfield on bacon curing, I got sent off to the bacon curing course, and I got sent off to a judging course somewhere too. So I came back to Wiltshire as an expert on pigs, cutting pigs up and preserving pigs in every conceivable way and cooking pigs in every conceivable way. Because if you were a private person, you could keep a pig and you would get you could get rations from the Minister of Agriculture. You fed the rest of the pig with whatever you could get hold of. And at the end of the time, which was about 6 months, you usually kept a pig about 6 months, and at the end of that time, the ministry took half of the pig for the rations that it had given you, and you could do what you liked with the other half. And so I went round, not only there, but late in another job later, I went round doing bacon curing with private individuals. And that was interesting. Some of it was very funny. I mean, some of it really was funny. I remember going to one woman who got her pig, and we had to go down twice, once to see where they were going to store this bacon, usually in the bath. The bath was usually the best place to store it, because it leaked, and so you had to have something like that. And I went to this female, and we discussed her pig and what we were going to do with the pig, and all the rest of it.